disclaimer. The following broadcast gives a true and honest account of the events described, and all evidence and details herein are solely factual. What you are about to hear is real and may disturb you. Caution is strongly advised. Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
If you enjoy our show and find our research interesting, please consider supporting us. Head over to www.deadsoulspodcast.com and see how you can donate to our research and investigations and find other ways to support us. We really appreciate you stopping by. You can also find us over on Instagram if that's more your thing. Just search Dead Souls Podcast and we'll come up. As always, thank you for joining us. In the early 1990s, Dr. John Brandenburg, plasma physicist and propulsion scientist, was recruited for a NASA mission called Clementine. He had a long career working for the United States government. He's famous for inventing the MET thermal plasma thruster. But this project was even more special. It would change his life and the way he perceived reality forever. The Clementine mission had a clear and no-nonsense objective. Dr. Brandenburg and his team of top scientists would send a satellite to orbit the moon, mapping out the surface below and hopefully finding evidence of water. After analyzing the images from the orbiter, Brandenburg's team found something remarkable, however. Large deposits of ice near the moon's southern pole. That, however, wasn't the most surprising thing that the Clementine mission photographed. Brandenburg identified something in the images that might have been using said ice or water as a resource. There appeared to be a giant rectangular structure sitting right on the moon's surface. As Dr. Brandenburg looked at the picture further, he knew without a doubt in his mind that it was something artificial, meaning that someone or something had constructed it. Clementine's lunar photos were handed to the US Defense Department and onto a team with a higher security clearance. They remain classified. When Dr. Brandenburg tried to follow up regarding the photographs, he says he was told to keep the information to himself and not to interfere any further. Dr. Brandenburg wondered if NASA and the Defense Department could be hiding more. Perhaps they had seen other artificial structures within the many photographs that they had taken. He pored over the Apollo program's images of the moon, looking for evidence that what he saw wasn't a singular anomaly. It wasn't long until he discovered images of what appeared to be a sprawling complex with piping systems, machinery, and other seemingly artificial structures on the moon's surface. Dr. Brandenburg and a number of other NASA employees have spoken out about their belief that there's something that we are not being told about Earth's satellite. There is a growing knowledge and outspoken number of ex-NASA employees who state there may be a living presence on our moon or even inside it. This is Chapel Bell. Now first, here are 3 points of fact to clarify. The NASA Clementine mission was a joint space project between the United States Ballistic Missile Defense Organization and NASA. It launched on January the 25th, 1994. The Chapel Bell Project was the codename of a US Department of Defense and NASA Over the Horizon Radar System project that ran from 1969 until sometime after the Apollo missions were cancelled. It was tested by tracking various components of the Apollo system while in orbit. As the mission and its data remain classified, there is no known exact end date. The NASA Apollo program was the third United States human spaceflight program carried out by NASA, which succeeded in preparing and landing the first humans on the moon between 1968 and 1972. The program began in 1961 and officially closed in 1975. All three of these programs, missions, or projects are in various forms of disclosure within the public domain. Now, let's look at the structure of the moon. Some say that there's evidence that the features of the moon and its entire existence are too good to be true, too perfect to have been formed naturally perhaps even the work of intelligent design. Do you think it's possible that extraterrestrial life has already set up camp either on or below the lunar surface? Have they always been there? Let's get into it. Since the dawn of civilization, one of mankind's biggest mysteries has always been what's looming above us. You may not have given it much thought. It's always been there, a constant. At most, maybe you considered it an aesthetic backdrop. Yet the moon controls so much of what happens here on Earth. It affects the ocean tides, our circadian rhythms, the seasons. Hell, there are even some folk who believe that a person's fate and destiny are controlled by the celestial body itself. But, and that's a big but, there's also so much that we don't understand about the moon. Perhaps for good reason. The moon is much farther away than it appears in the night sky. Actually, fun fact, you can insert around 30 more planet Earths in the 239,000 miles between us and the lunar surface. Getting there by spacecraft is no small task, which is why, for centuries, humans could only speculate about the moon's mysterious properties and attributes. Which mankind did, by the way, but, as we'll get into in a short while, not as much as you'd expect. British science fiction author H.G. Wells postulated an eccentric new theory about the lunar satellite in his 1901 novel, The First Men in the Moon. Wells painted the moon as a place with breathtaking terrain, mountains, lakes, and lush vegetation. It had the means to support life, but the interior was carved out and overrun by an insect-like alien species called the Selenites. At the time of its release, Wells' book was extremely popular, though perceived purely as entertainment. But just 6 decades later, H.G. Wells' thoughts would actually be put to the test. In July of 1969, mankind defied all odds by traveling the huge distance to the moon, transversing the Van Allen radiation belts, and touching down in the Sea of Tranquility Basin. Media outlets all over the world broadcast NASA astronaut Neil Armstrong's legendary first words from the moon's surface.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
On May 25th, 1961, President John F. Kennedy had given NASA a single mission: to perform a manned lunar landing, plant a flag in representation of the United States of America, and then return to Earth safely. And NASA delivered with resounding and groundbreaking success. But as significant as it was, Apollo 11 would just be the beginning. The Apollo program aimed to commit a total of 9 more manned trips to the moon. And by the time Apollo 11 had touched down, NASA scientists were already drawing up early plans and ideas for lunar colonies and even trips to Mars. Their actions may have been premature, but almost immediately following their early success, they upped the ante. Just 4 months later, on November the 14th, 1969, Apollo 12 launched into orbit. This time, the astronauts on board had additional responsibilities. They would test a new landing method with improved precision, and they would hopefully moonwalk farther from their module on this mission. They would also collect geological samples to determine the moon's chemical makeup. And finally, they would study the moon's seismic activity, thus giving them a better sense of what was inside our closest astronomical neighbor. On November the 19th, Apollo 12 astronauts Pete Conrad and Al Bean landed the lunar module on the moon's surface. The pair set up a seismometer along the Ocean of Storms, the largest of the moon's dark plains, and they collected the geology samples and material that they needed. Just 31 hours later, they were back in orbit. After rejoining astronaut Dick Gordon in the Commander Service Module, Conrad and Bean's biggest experiment was ready to begin. In order to test the moon's seismic activity, they would detach their lunar capsule and intentionally send it plummeting back towards and into the lunar surface. The capsule crashed into the moon as planned, with a force equivalent to around 1 ton of TNT and triggering significant shockwaves which built up over the next 8 minutes. Meanwhile, data receiving centers back on Earth recorded the seismic data which they had hoped would provide us with a sense of the moon's inner composition. But it wasn't just the numbers they were after. The NASA analyst also needed to hear the sound that the shockwaves made. Imagine it being kind of like banging on a wall. The scientists could use that sound to determine if there was a stud behind it, metaphorically speaking. So in receipt of the data, NASA scientists and technicians magnified the vibrations to better assess the results. They were left stunned. The sound was nothing like they had anticipated. The moon, witnesses to the event all corroborate, rang like a bell for nearly an hour in length. Not a loud gong echoing through space like Big Ben or some science fiction movie, but seismically speaking, of course. This immediately made many of the scientists present that day wonder if the moon had a hollow interior. While many think that such a thing is entirely preposterous, like something from a movie, if particularly cavernous, or if it had been hollowed out by something, well, it's entirely plausible. At a news conference the following day, the experiment coordinator and director, Morris Ewing, admitted that he was baffled by the results, as was his team. Mainly as it went against all of the prior judgments and estimations that the technicians had planned for until that point. However, Ewing stopped short of announcing any interpretations just yet. It's not clear what his theories were at the time, but whispers about the hollowness were already swirling around the corridors of NASA. Following the Apollo 12 mission, Dr. Werner von Braun, who was then head of NASA's flight center, made a decision. The next time, the next mission, an experiment, he thought, they were going to crash an even larger object into the moon. Something to really double-check the sound and its data. So on April the 11th, 1970, Apollo 13 departed Earth's atmosphere. But just 56 hours into the flight, there was an issue.
This is Houston, say again, please.
Houston, we've had a problem.
An explosion in the ship's oxygen tank left the crew scrambling for recovery and their lives. Apollo 13 was forced to abort its mission ahead of the event. The lunar landing was cancelled and the crew were forced, following much support in tense moments, to return to Earth. Despite the emergency though, there was still one experiment that could be salvaged, one they could still complete before returning to Earth. The objective was much more significant than before. On its return to Earth, Apollo 13 dislocated the third stage of its launch vehicle from the spacecraft with pinpoint mathematical accuracy. The machine went crashing into the moon. This time it landed with a force of 11.5 tons of TNT, and when NASA technicians at their data centers measured the seismic signals from the Apollo 13 crash, they found they were 30 times the force of Apollo 12's. When these were magnified, the moon rang like a gong for more than 3 hours and to a depth of 20 miles before dissipating. Given this outcome, many researchers and scientists decided that the hollow moon theory had to be true. Former NASA contractor Ken Johnson has since spoken out. He said he was working closely with the Lunar Receiving Laboratory at the time when he overheard several scientists mention something peculiar. The moon, they said, had wobbled after the crash in a way that made it seem like it had struts or inner stability holdings inside. Simply put, it was like the moon housed an artificially made system designed to counteract any significant blows or impacts to the lunar surface. NASA's attempts to gather more information on the hollow moon theory didn't actually end there. In every subsequent Apollo mission, official NASA documents show a classified experiment called Chapel Bell. There is almost no information about these tests available to the public, as Chapel Bell remains classified to this very day. But judging by the operation's name alone, the experiments were likely meant to keep studying the seismic resonance of lunar impact similar to those captured by the Apollo 11, 12, and 13 missions. But something strange happened after the Apollo 17 mission in 1972. The United States cancelled the remaining three Apollo missions. The government explanation was that there simply wasn't enough public interest to continue moon exploration at that time, nor was public funding sufficient any longer? Yet some researchers and theorists question the reasons for these cancellations. Did NASA cancel those missions to avoid revealing too much, for example? Earth and planetary research scientist Dr. Sean C. Solomon said that the lunar orbiter experiments vastly improved our knowledge of the moon's gravitational field, indicating the frightening possibility that the moon may actually be hollow. According to renowned astrophysicists Joseph S. Swarovski and Carl Sagan, our planetary bodies are formed by gathering small rocks, dust particles, and gas. Essentially, they snowball over time, meaning a natural satellite simply cannot physically be a hollow object. Which implies, if our moon is hollow, perhaps it's not naturally made at all. If it is in fact artificial, the question is, who made the moon? Who created the structure? So when the Apollo 12 mission released its lunar module intentionally and crashed it into the moon's surface in 1969, scientists were indeed baffled by the results. This led some scientists, technicians, and experts to wonder, was the moon the creation of intelligent design? If the moon is an artificially made structure, it poses the obvious questions: who made it, why was it placed there, and what was or is its purpose? In order to fully grasp these questions and their possible answers, we need to start with one question bigger than all. Scientists have been debating for centuries as to how the moon came to be. There are three possibilities that scientists have considered, and one of the most prominent was called the capture theory. That theory states that the moon was a wandering celestial body that was formed somewhere else in our solar system. Then billions of years ago, it was pulled in by Earth's gravitational force while passing the planet and has remained there ever since. This concept fell by the wayside when scientists realized that capturing an object as large as the moon was nearly impossible for a planet the size of Earth to do so. The moon is one quarter the size of the Earth. It's larger than any planet-to-moon ratio seen in our solar system, not to mention that some of the moon's compositional makeup actually resembles Earth's, which is also a rarity. This is why some scientists lean towards a different explanation for the moon's existence. The co-accretion theory implies that the moon and the Earth were formed at the same time by the same primordial cloud of gas and dust, thus meaning that the moon is part of the same formation as Earth. But the co-accretion theory has been debunked. Many scientists have argued that the moon doesn't have enough of the Earth's shared materials for this theory to be true. Which brings us to the third possibility. And the third scientific possibility for how the moon came to be is the giant impact theory. This is the idea that a Mars-sized planet came crashing into Earth billions of years ago. Thus, debris from that collision amassed together, forming the moon. While some experts consider this the most probable theory, it also has its flaws. There are scientific counter-arguments that deal with the chemical composition of the moon, making this theory null and void to many scientists. Understandably, the moon's formation is still debated by the world's top scientists and some of the world's best minds. But they use this uncertainty as well as the moon's very unique properties to argue another theory, that the moon may be intelligently designed. A 2011 study published in the journal Icarus described just how rare our moon really is. It reported that less than 10% of planets in the universe have a satellite large enough to help them sustain life, like ours. If we didn't have the moon that we do, the Earth's tilt would fall off by as much as 85 degrees. So let's say the moon left our orbit tomorrow, then the sun's UV rays would migrate over the next millennia. These rays would blast our poles instead of the equator. Life as we know it would cease to exist. Our lunar satellite is also the exact right size and the perfect distance from Earth to completely block the sun, giving us our biannual solar eclipses. Isaac Asimov, author and professor of biochemistry, was famously mind-blown by how improbable all these requirements occurring together really were. He is said to have claimed the following: "There is no astronomical reason why the moon and the sun should fit so well. It is the surest of coincidences, and only the Earth among all the planets is blessed in this fashion. The chances of a lunar satellite with these exact proportions is roughly 1 in a trillion. So it is entirely understandable to believe that our moon is intelligently designed. We certainly aren't the only civilization to believe this either. Many other civilizations throughout history also held the same belief. Those who support the artificial moon theory point out that the farther back in history you go, the less historical records of the moon there actually are. Which is strange, as that isn't the case for other planets or indeed the sun. Yet, it's our closest neighbor. Historians and researchers state that if you consider cave drawings from the Neolithic and Paleolithic periods, which span from about 2.5 million to 4,000 years ago, there is essentially no representations of the moon at all. This seems like a hard thing to miss, especially given that the sun, the sky, and the cosmos is so widely depicted. So the question is, was it always orbiting our planet, or did it arrive at some point? Plenty of Roman and Greek authors mention the idea. Aristotle, for example, said that the Pelasgians, the ancestors of the Greeks, lived in a time before there was a moon in the sky. Because of this, they were actually given the nickname the Proselenes, reportedly translating to before the moon. Another Greek author, Apollonius of Rhodes, also wrote of a time when all of the celestial bodies weren't yet placed in the skies. A specific Greek tribe known as the Arcadians dwelled in the mountains and fed off acorns. They lived, according to the Greek literature, before the existence of the moon. Later, Plutarch backed this up by saying the Arcadians were older than the moon itself. Additionally, the indigenous people of Colombia's Bogota Highlands also hold historic literature that discusses a time when the Earth was sans, or without, a moon. The Kalevala, one of the most significant works in Finnish literature, talks about life before the moon was placed in orbit. While there are fewer allegories on how the moon got there, it does make you wonder if perhaps the Earth didn't need the moon to survive after all. Yet its arrival might have caused a significant shift in the planet's operations. Between 12 to 10,000 years ago, scientists know that humanity experienced some kind of monolithic event here on Earth. An event so big that it could almost be compared to the destruction of the dinosaurs. Scientists today are still trying to make sense of the details of said event. But what we do know is around this time, there was an inexplicable shift in the climate which contributed to a mass extinction of large breed animals. Many researchers believe that civilizations along coastlines at the time were wiped out by massive floods. It's possible that some advanced cultures essentially vanished from existence at this time. Award-nominated author and UFO researcher Rob Shelsky believes the cause of this was the moon's sudden arrival. Paleontologists haven't put much stake into Shelsky's idea, however. But there is anecdotal evidence of a moon arriving in our skies, and it aligns perfectly with that 12 to 10,000 year historical mark. Tiwanaku is the name of a pre-Incan civilization capital city that existed in what's now Bolivia. Archaeologists at this site in the 1970s discovered symbols painted on a wall that depict a time when our moon came into orbit, carbon dated to around 11,500 years ago. This lines up perfectly with that mysterious global event. Additional information was decoded in the 1956 book titled The Calendar of Tiwanaku. The authors of that book, Hans Schindler, an English professor from Vienna, and Peter Allen, a professor of archaeology from the UK, evidence that the pre-Incans spoke of a time when the moon was an independent planet, not yet belonging to the Earth, and during this time a different, much smaller moon was in its place. This could explain how life on Earth was still able to exist prior to our moon, albeit a little differently than today. There is also a well-known South African ethno group known as the Zulu people. The Zulu have a legend about how the moon came into Earth's orbit from many centuries ago. According to the Zulu shaman named Krata Mutwa, the world was a very different place before the moon arrived. The entire planet was lush, green, and constantly covered by a gentle mist. Mutwa continued, the legend says the moon was towed into the Earth's orbit by two brothers, man-like creatures with scaly aquatic skin called Wawana and Umpunku. When the moon arrived, it caused giant cataclysms and floods on Earth, once again mirroring the mysterious events which scientists are still trying to understand. The legend says that the brothers stole the moon, which was actually the egg of a great fire dragon. They emptied out its yolk-like interior, turning the moon into a hollowed-out shell. From there, they made the lunar satellite a headquarters to keep a watchful eye over the human race, also allowing their base to serve as a kind of lunar pit stop for other intergalactic travelers. Whilst on the surface, the legend seems wholly implausible and outlandish. Remember that people from times long ago could only interpret their stories to metaphors, analogies, and references to which they were familiar, and these would have been extremely limited in prehistoric times. Examples of this are countless, but one specific example is this. The Egyptian god Ra was the first pharaoh of Egypt. Upon his death, he transitioned to the sky to oversee his kingdom and all of mankind. Ra travelled high above his kingdom in the day and then at night travelled into the underworld to battle Apophis, who tried to prevent life from occurring. Each morning Ra was birthed from his mother Nut and gave light to the world once again and defeating the evil Apophis. All this ancient Egyptian story is saying is that there is a sun who gave light during the day, and as the earth turned and it became night, the sun was no longer visible. Then each morning the sun would rise again as the earth completed its 360-degree cycle. It is because of the way that people of prehistory use stories and metaphors to describe their realities that some scientists and scholars believe there is more to Earth history than science is telling us. Stories of ancient aliens and advanced civilizations, for example. I digress, however. The Zulu legend from earlier does mirror paleontological evidence. The Sahara and other deserts of Africa were once covered with lush green vegetation many, many, many years ago, around 10,000 years ago in fact, about the same time that ancient and mysterious climate change that scientists don't yet quite understand occurred. Anyway, during the Apollo missions, NASA recovered a third of a ton of rock and soil from the lunar surface. These samples show that the moon and Earth do actually have some chemical properties to imply a linked history, which is why the giant impact theory is still the most accepted explanation by scientists. So can we rule out the idea of a real-life Death Star? Probably. However, there are signs that suggest the alleged intergalactic pit stop, which forms part of the ancient Zulu legend, might actually be true. This is because scientists have found possible evidence of camps on the lunar surface. Camps that aren't ours. So, as we mentioned, between 1969 and 1972, NASA launched 7 manned missions to the lunar surface, some of which included tests that remain classified to this day, like the Chapel Bell experiment, for example. The Apollo program was originally meant to include 20 missions, but after the 17th, NASA ceased operations, with the explanation being that there wasn't sufficient public interest or funding to keep the program running. Some research wonder, however, if NASA knew better than to return to the moon, that they put off a return because they discovered something menacing, something that could pose a greater threat to society. Which poses the question that we have been getting at all along. Is there evidence of extraterrestrial life on the moon that the United States government is trying to hide? This theory might be easy to brush aside as nonsense or without merit, and if this information was just coming from a matter of ufologists or pseudoscientific authors, then I could understand and accept that. But this theory is not. This theory, evidence, and information is coming from former NASA employees, military personnel, and scientists who worked in the field for many years. In July 1969, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed the Eagle on the moon's surface. But the trip into space wasn't all smooth sailing. The astronauts' communication, for example, with Earth, was spotty at times. In fact, during the moon landing, the astronaut lost contact with mission control on the ground for just over 2 minutes. Or at least that's the official story. The astronauts were actually equipped with alternate channels on their radios, including a medical channel that was not made public and could be used in case of emergencies. During those 2 minutes of lost contact, eyewitnesses at Mission Control have said that the astronauts actually switched their radio channel purposefully to talk about something. They didn't want the rest of the world to hear what they were about to communicate, to hear that there was another presence other than them on the surface of the moon. Ken Johnston, a former NASA photo manager, stated that Neil Armstrong reported something terrifying over his private medical channel. Johnston states that Armstrong told Mission Control, "They are here. They are parked alongside a crater and they are watching us." According to researcher Otto Binder, the same transmission was intercepted by a number of civilians with technological acumen. There were also recorded conversations between Armstrong and NASA's chief medical officer, where Armstrong confirms he can see large numbers of watchers situated on the moon's surface. Buzz Aldrin also admitted to seeing things which he couldn't explain. He claimed that while they were in the main cabin of the craft, he saw indiscernible lights flashing outside and what appeared to be an intelligently controlled object following them. When he turned to Armstrong to ask if he saw the lights and objects, Armstrong replied, "Yes, I saw about 100 of them." Aldrin said that him and Armstrong were smart enough to not say, "Houston, there's a light out there that's following us," or words to that effect. Aldrin did later tell NASA about these lights, though, in private during his post-mission debrief. Similar sightings had been previously recorded in NASA's chronological catalogue of reported lunar events, so they were comments NASA had been previously aware of. A few days later, the astronauts stood before the press to talk about the greatest achievement of mankind's history. But they weren't wearing looks of pride. Instead, many viewers stated that they seemed somber, anxious, and awkward. Maybe because they saw things they couldn't talk about. Scott Hoare is an engineer that worked with Neil Armstrong during his tenure at the University of Cincinnati. He stated that in the years after Armstrong had traveled to the moon, he would refuse to talk about the subject and not want to elaborate on the subject any further. Friends state that Armstrong would often leave the room if the subject of the moon landing or extraterrestrial life ever entered conversation. And it's not just a few inexplicable lights that NASA seems worried about. Other missions to the moon, both manned and satellite-driven, have captured images of structures seemingly like artificial-made objects on the lunar surface. The government can't always, or doesn't want to always, explain. 2.5 years before Apollo 11, the Orbiter 2 spacecraft was circling the moon taking pictures for potential Apollo landing sites. Scientists back at NASA, upon receiving these images, examined said photographs. Eyewitnesses at the time state that they found what appeared to be 8 large pointed spires looking kind of like the Washington Monument in shape and scale. One of the spires measured over 15 stories tall. They were all on the surface of the moon. Russian scientists were provided with the same photographs and analyzed them further. They stated that they had found even more nuances than those who originally studied them. The spires were arranged in a very specific way, the Russian scientists stated. They were the exact same distance and specification from one another as the 3 pyramids in Giza, Egypt. What's incredible is that a senior technology and lunar scientist at NASA was questioned about the spires and the photographs in 1982. He replied that, "Yes, we know these photographs and they were very clear, but there has been no speculation on them and they have been filed for now." Since the early 1980s, NASA has a well-known policy of removing unknown or questionable items from its photographs before releasing them to the public. Its policy, they say, is not to cover up anything or hide certain things, but merely to remove items of planetary terrain which is anomalous, yet totally natural, but that we cannot give an accurate or unsatisfactory answer for at that time. NASA also combines multiple images into one, colorizes photographs, and improves their visionary appeal, they say. Another odd feature that was captured during the Apollo 14 mission in 1971 was while Alan Shepard and Edgar Mitchell walked the moon's surface, astronaut Stuart Roosa stayed in the command module Kitty Hawk. Roosa circled the celestial body while taking photographs and video of the moon's surface. When the ship arrived at the far side of the moon, Roosa's camera caught something incredible. A cluster of five dome-shaped objects. One had a light shining inside and what appeared to be a steam stack rising from the top. NASA photo manager Ken Johnson says he saw the footage for himself and he was certain that these objects were not naturally formed objects. Johnson states that the following day he was prevented from sharing the film with NASA engineers, and further, that image subsequently disappeared from the official archives. Johnston confronted his boss about the photographs, but he was told to stop asking questions and to destroy any further copies that he found. That wasn't the only suspicious incident that occurred at the time. A NASA contractor named Donna Hare states that she saw some of those images disappear herself. One afternoon, she watched as one of her co-workers airbrushed an aerial object from official imagery prior to release. She asked her other colleagues if they knew about the cover-ups, and some admitted that they did. Others refused to talk about it. Hare says that whatever they were editing from those photographs was too high-tech to be made by humans. Dr. John Brandenburg also realized that NASA was keeping an important and worrying secret when he worked on the Clementine mission in the early 1990s. He claims there were plenty of people with high-level security clearances who were well aware of an alien presence on the moon. One specific afternoon, Brandenburg says, he was called into a screening room along with several military and Air Force generals. Together, they analyzed what appeared to be an interstellar spaceflight, several intelligently controlled ships which maneuvered out of the way of lasers. It is entirely unclear where they got this footage or what specifically they were looking at. But they were asked for professional and scientific opinions and thoughts during the meeting. Looking around the room, Brandenburg saw a group of faces wearing nothing but pure astonishment. At one point, Brandenburg stated, one of the most senior generals turned towards him and asked where he thought they were from. When Brandenburg stated that they must be from at least 40 light years away from here, the general replied with three eerie words, Brandenburg says. Long supply lines. Brandenburg believes the general was thinking of ways to get resources out there in the event that there would be some kind of war. Perhaps they knew this. Perhaps they were speculating. At that time, however, there were no ways to get any supplies much farther than the moon at best, Brandenburg thought. Maybe they knew something when the manned lunar mission stopped after Apollo 17 in 1972. At least on paper. However, there are some theorists who believe that NASA did continue lunar missions and off-record space flights. In 2007, top-secret footage supposedly taken during those missions was leaked by a man named William Routledge. Routledge claimed that he was once NASA astronaut. He, along with fellow US astronaut Leona Snyder and Russian cosmonaut Alexei Leonov, had gone on a joint space mission. The mission, he stated, was named Apollo 20. Yes, this is a pretty bold claim. Although the United States and Russia had collaborated on projects before, including the 1965 Apollo Soyuz mission, Alex Leonov was one of the commanders on that mission. It's what happened on the Apollo 20 mission that is somewhat shocking, however. Reportedly, the Apollo 20 mission left Earth on August 16, 1976 from Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. Its launch was a resounding success, apparently. Their mission was to dock on the far side of the moon, make lunar landing, and explore the moon at closer range. Something Apollo 15 had captured from above would appear to be remains of a civilization and some kind of craft. So according to Routledge, he and Leonov touched down on the lunar surface and began exploring the structures captured by Apollo 15. Routledge said the buildings appeared to be abandoned, dissolved into little more than rubble. the Apollo 20 team supposedly analyzed a meteor impact and a strange spacecraft. It appears as though it had been there for a significant period of time. The craft itself looked like it had been opened and explored prior by someone else. The team uncovered remnants of vegetation, rocks that were emanating an unfamiliar yellow substance, and humanoid corpses. When you hear of all this, it sounds like completely fabricated nonsense. It's possible that Routledge made all of this up for his 15 minutes of fame. However, after doing some digging on his background, there may be some circumstantial evidence to support his claims. In 2010, the University of Utah commemorated an Army veteran named William Jesse Routledge. He had flown Cobra attack helicopters in Vietnam, which means he had aeronautical skills and experience needed, and also would have been about 30 years old at the time of the NASA mission, the ideal NASA astronaut selection age. Finally, there is a record of a W.J. Routledge applying to NASA in an unknown capacity in June 1973, at which point that individual's records become classified. There is no proof that this is the same W.J. Routledge, but it's worth mentioning, I think. A final point on this subject is that NASA astronaut training program is around 2 years, so that would make the timing of all this add up perfectly. But do with that information what you will. In 1960, NASA hired the Brookings Institution, a famed research group, to conduct a study. It was titled Proposed Studies of the Implications of Peaceful Space Activities for Human Affairs. It's also commonly known as the Brookings Report. What they found was striking. The global reception to extraterrestrials might not be a positive one. The report proposed that society could eventually fall apart if they learned of a looming alien presence. It recommends that government and those in power should withhold certain information from the public domain, if discovered, to maintain the status quo and avoid significant panic. So it is possible that NASA is simply acting on the advice of the report. To put things slightly tongue-in-cheek, maybe keeping UFOs a secret could be for our own benefit so that we can go to our kids' soccer games and out to dinner with friends completely ignorant to a potential alien threat. In which case, I want to say thank you, NASA. Thank you for protecting us from the truth. Ignorance is a virtue, and our lives would surely be miserable existing with the harsh truths of reality. Maybe it's a good thing we are kept in the dark. Or maybe NASA and governments need to obtain a new report written and compiled in this century to assess how the world would perceive a greater knowledge of what exists around them and in their past. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. Visit deathcult.com for more information on how you can help us and support our broadcasts. There you can also find links to our socials, Patreon, and episodes. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.